everybody. Bill Buckmaster along with Ray Allen. Ray's engineering and producing the show. And together we welcome you on this September the 21st, the eve of a new season. Got autumn right around the corner, and just right on cue, the weather is going to change and it's going to be a little bit cooler. And the hints of autumn will certainly be upon us in southern Arizona. To our Jewish friends, Happy New Year, Rosh Hashanah. It is the Jewish New Year, and I hope you are enjoying the New Year celebrations. So buckle up. We've got a lot of content to cover over the next 60 minutes or 55 minutes here on The Buckmaster Show on AM 1030 KVOI, live streaming at buckmastershow.com and KVOI.com. So without further ado, let's go to the state capitol, and the Arizona Superintendent of Public Instruction, Diane Douglas, is with us on the live line. We're going to be spending the next 25 minutes with Superintendent Douglas, and we've got a lot of material to cover. Superintendent, how are you?
I'm outstanding, Bill. How about yourself?
Doing very well, and thank you for asking. First of all, let's your overview on how we did with the test scores in the state. Was it okay, in your opinion, or what do you say?
Well, we see an upward trend on our test scores in the past couple of years since we've gone to the new AZ Merit test, but overall, I don't think the test scores are where we want them to be, but my opinion is more that it's the test than it is the lack of ability on the part of our students. We have many other indicators. Schools take benchmarking testing. They're looking at their students all across the course of a year, and then all of a sudden on one day we have this one test and we say that's what determines how well our children are doing. And I just don't believe in that type of system.
It's crazy. I mean, so much time and energy in the classroom devoted to this one test. It isn't an overall picture of how a kid does, is it?
No, in my opinion, I trust what our teachers see in the classroom each and every single day and the measures of progress they take all along the way. Now, one good thing that has come from that is some legislative change this year, because the only students that the test was really high stakes for were our third graders with Move On When Reading. Well, now the legislature's made some changes, and our teachers and our schools and our districts are allowed to use other indicators. So if that kid came in on one particular day and had a very bad day, but they can show that they really are moving on grade level, that's the appropriate way to determine where that child's at.
This referendum to stop Arizona's expansion of the voucher program apparently is going to go to the ballot. It's called Proposition 305. Do you have any early opinion? Have you taken any kind of stand on this proposition?
You know what? It's been referred to the voters, and the voters of Arizona will speak. And just like when the legislature passed the law, the department stood ready to enact it, which is what I swore to the voters I would do, uphold the Constitution and uphold the laws of the state of Arizona. If this goes to the ballot and it's repealed, then we will do what we're mandated to do.
Proposition 301 is going to be sunsetting. That's that sales tax for education. Let's see, we've got about 2 or 3 years left on that, but something's got to be done one way or the other, doesn't it, on that?
I can't even imagine what would happen if that's not continued. But what I'm asking the legislature to consider as they refer it back out to the citizens of Arizona is, let's make it a full penny. Let's make of that increase, which would be 0.4 tenths of a cent, 0.3 tenths goes to our teacher salaries, 0.1, which would be about it'd be $400 million overall, $300 million to teacher salaries, another $100 million to our infrastructure to support our facilities. I'm sure you're aware there's yet another lawsuit against the state.
Yes,
I mean,
sir,
I'm tired of all our children's educational money going to the courts for lawsuits.
Yep.
So maybe we can help waylay that. The other thing I'm asking when it's referred is that it be made permanent, because in 2000 we said, oh, 20 years was plenty time. You know, we won't have to address it for a long time. And lo and behold, 20 years is almost up. And I've been on a school board, and I've seen how hard it is when funding sources come and go and come and go. We need consistency for our school boards and for our districts, and no more financial cliffs.
This new policy report was very revealing from the nonprofit, nonpartisan Grand Canyon Institute. They're based up in Phoenix, and they put this report out just today. One thing that really caught my eye was the charter school teachers earn 20% less than public district school teachers. Does that surprise you at all, that number?
I think I was a little bit taken aback by that. You know, our charter schools don't necessarily have to report all the same information that our district schools do. So certainly I'd like to see an equal playing field on that account, that we're all very open and very, redundancy here, but very accountable for public money.
And that report also shows that charter schools do kind of have a different situation, and this was created by the legislature. The governing charter schools, when it comes to financial regulations, are substantially less stringent than public schools. Does that come as a surprise to you or not?
It doesn't come as a surprise to me. I've known for a long time that the rules were very different. As a matter of fact, when I first came into office, we created what we called the Title 15 Committee, because in my opinion, it's not leveling the playing field. You don't make it harder for someone else. I understand why the intent of some of the laws that were passed for charter schools, but to me, let's take regulation off everybody and try to level the playing field that way. Unfortunately, we had some great ideas that came forward from a committee, how to make life, shall we say, a little easier for our traditional districts.
Yeah.
By the time the bill got through the legislature, they what they call Christmas treat it, that the education bills that were left got piled on it. So unfortunately, I think it grew Title 15 instead of reducing it as my intent had been. But, you know, if it's good for charter schools to have some freedom and latitude, then why isn't that good for our traditional districts? Because they're all public money.
It would make sense, wouldn't it, to level the playing field? That just, it seems common sense.
Right.
All right, let's go to our live line. Jim has called us. I believe it's our friend Jim Kelly. Jim called us at 790-2040. Jim, you're with the Superintendent of Public Instruction.
Hi, Superintendent Douglas. It's been my opinion for a long time that school districts are an anachronism of the 19th and early 20th century. Isn't it time we come into the 21st century, abolish the taxing districts of school districts themselves, and just give the authority for public instruction to the county superintendent of public instruction?
Oh, interesting question. Go ahead, Superintendent Douglas.
I hadn't really thought about that, to tell you the truth. So would your concept be that then there's a county-wide tax for all the to run all the school districts within a county?
Yes, I believe that's what Jim was saying.
And then what happens to districts that overlay different counties? If we kind of keep those same residential boundaries for our school, I guess I hadn't really thought of it from that perspective before, but I'm kind of someone who believes in all ideas coming to the table to be debated and discussed, because I believe that's how we may get to a better place.
And that's what I like about our program. Talk radio brings some of these ideas that we have not thought about, right, Superintendent?
Oh, I agree.
How about
that's why I do my listening tours, to get out, talk to the people, hear what their thoughts are in all areas of Arizona.
What did you hear on this most you had a We Are Listening tour just recently, didn't you?
Yeah, I had to. We were up in Sedona and then Bullhead City.
What are you hearing?
Well, a lot of the same themes we hear each time. Number one is that our school districts, our school boards are struggling. That they need some more dedicated resources. We hear loud and clearly that Arizonans want their teachers paid better, hence my Prop 301 recommendation. You know, it's interesting, we often talk about, you know, that our teachers' salaries are low, but that our, you know, but, oh, we're on a different economic base than other areas of the country. But if you look at it, certainly ours is not the lowest. As a matter of fact, I did some research on this very recently, and where from a cost of living standpoint, we're in the middle of the pack. Our teachers' salaries are still among the lowest in the nation.
Wow. Let's take our break right here. Superintendent Diane Douglas, stick around. We will get back to you after we hear some from important messages from the people that sponsor our program, like Green Things, my favorite place to go for all things green. They're just west of the Brandy Fenton Park on River, East River Road 3384 by the Rito River Walk. What a great weekend to do some gardening with this change in weather coming. Also, go to their website, greenthingsaz.com, for the full listing of the upcoming free workshops for all gardeners. Be right back. The Twisted Tandoor, the legendary Indian food truck, now has a permanent brick-and-mortar home at Swan and Camp Lowell Drive. The menu expands on the popular Indian classic offerings from the original Twisted Tandoor food truck. The Twisted Tandoor, it's at 4660 East Camp Lowell Drive and on the web at thetwistedtandoor.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport with six airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections. I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects helping make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient, and improve mobility leads to a better economy and new jobs through the increased flow of people, goods, and services. More efficient access gets us to where we want to go faster, and that means more time for family. Working together for a better future, more at rtamobility.com.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting the stories missed by the mainstream media. Our sources bring you regional, national, and international news from a different perspective. Opinion from top national columnists, plus Eric Peters with auto reviews, Bob Garver on movies, a section on Western heritage, and sports coverage too. It's a cross-section of information found nowhere else. SOAZNewsX.com. Subscriptions are free at SOAZNewsX.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
What comes to mind when you envision the holidays? If it means surrounding yourself with family and friends as you welcome treasured traditions, just imagine if those moments were paired with sinking your toes in fine white sand and exploring quaint seaside towns. This winter, spend your holiday with a sense of adventure on a family reunion vacation. At Bon Voyage, we specialize in bringing generations together through travel. This is the perfect time to plan. Call Bon Voyage Travel at 797-1110.
Back. It is the Thursday edition of the Buckmaster Show. The Friday Focus interview tomorrow will feature the mayor of the city of Tucson, Jonathan Rothschild. will be with us. Tim Steller will be here from the Arizona Daily Star and Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com. But let's go back now on the live line. Superintendent Diane Douglas is with us from the state capitol. Superintendent, what did you think of the Attorney General's lawsuit against the Arizona Board of Regents? This is over what is alleged to be unconstitutional tuition hike at our three state universities.
Well, and you may have seen, and if you didn't, we issued a press release on it yesterday. When you see what has happened with tuition for our students, you know, our Constitution says we will keep it as low as reasonably possible, and that just doesn't seem to be the directions that our universities are going. A 300 to 400% increase on tuition.
Yeah.
Just doesn't seem right. And you look at, we hear within our state, our society, you know, this push to get as many kids as possible into university. Well, to me, it's not just about increasing enrollment numbers. If those kids don't come out with a viable degree that can actually help them pay their loans, I talk to too many young adults that have huge college bills, huge college tuition loans, and can't get gainful employment to help them pay them. I think we're going in a wrong direction.
And you do have a seat at the table on this, don't you?
I've actually asked to have a designee at the table, and so far we've been declined.
Huh. But I think the lawsuit is saying basically enough is enough, isn't it, on the tuition hikes?
I think that's what they're saying.
How about this expansion of your broadband project, trying to bring your office pretty much up to date when it comes to digital technology?
Well, and it's not about, there's two different issues. We've asked for funding from the legislature to be able to finish our AZED's project here and make sure that we have the resources we need to properly account for students and to make sure we can get the money to our school districts. But the broadband project is even more exciting than that, is this will bring internet access, reliable, dependable internet access to our rural areas. We already have hundreds of schools signed up that will impact tens of thousands of students. And for our rural school districts out there, they still have until April. It's a very short application process. We have the folks here on staff that can help walk them through it, a half an hour or less. We thank the Corporation Commission. They partnered with us to get the bulk of the funding that the state needs, and then some more from the legislative funding. But we expect it to bring about $110 million to our state in order to connect these students and get them the resources they need. It will also help with our teacher shortage, because if you pick any rural area you want to pick, if they can't get a physics teacher or a calculus teacher, those resources can now be brought into them. And I'm just so excited about it.
Yeah, because some of these rural areas are using substitute teachers, if you will. They just can't get teachers in the classroom in certain subject areas.
Right, and that's one of the things you talked about our listening tour before. One of the things we heard up in Bullhead City was the terminology they use, over the river. You know, how many of our teachers go over the river and leave Arizona because they can get much better salaries in another state?
We met our new leader here at Tucson Unified, Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, on the show recently. I was very impressed with this. I believe he's a fine young man, and I think he's the right fit for Tucson Unified. And one of the things he was talking about is that they have over 100 vacancies right now in the classroom where they are having to rely on substitutes, and it's a huge problem. Have you met Dr. Trujillo yet, Superintendent Douglas?
Not since he's officially become the superintendent, but when I was down in Tucson in, I believe it was June, we did stop in at the district and met him and met with his staff, and just to make sure we keep the ongoing discussions moving forward and to ensure we're working together.
What are we going to do about this, trying to get enough teachers, though, with these substitutes? This is a big issue.
Well, and it is very challenging, you know, because one of the things that makes it different, I don't know whether the vacancy rate in education is comparable to other industries. But the problem is, for education, we need a teacher in front of a classroom each and every single day. If you go to pick your local retail store and someone's absent, it doesn't have the impact that missing a teacher does. So I believe that getting better salaries for our teachers will be part of the help. And as I go out on listening tours, I try to tell our teachers that for some reason, at the 30,000-foot level in Arizona, we think we should be beating up public education. But when I'm out talking to parents and I'm talking to students, they so appreciate the work that their teachers do each and every single day. And I hope they take that away from the conversation more than they take away that we're not doing everything perfectly.
Have you had any contact with Betsy DeVos, the education secretary?
As a matter of fact, when I was in Washington in March, I was able to meet with her very briefly, kind of a walk and talk little meeting. And more recently, as we worked with her to get our Every Student Succeeds Act plan passed and approved by her, we had a conference call. I guess it was about 2 weeks ago now, and very pleasant. There were some things that the feds wanted us to change in the plan that our Arizona shareholders, stakeholders felt very strongly about, and I'm very pleased that we were able to get our ESSA plan through the Department of Ed intact so that what needs to happen for Arizona students continues to happen for them.
The ESSA, elaborate a bit on that, the ESSA program.
That's the Every Student Succeeds Act, and
yes,
that was passed by Congress in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
The intent of it originally was Congress returning authority to the states. And then what we saw happening through 2016 was the Department of Education putting a lot of rules and regulations in place that basically took back authority from the states. Well, as we know, we've had a change of administration now, and the rules and regs have been repealed. Arizona was in a very, very good place with that, because when we started to craft our plan, we decided we were going to follow the law so that when we got back to the law, we were in a great place and we were able to get that plan approved by Secretary DeVos.
There's another item that I wanted to just touch on briefly here, something called the Zip Code Project from your office. What is that all about?
The Zip Code Project, I'm so proud of that. That's part of our Arizona Kids Can't Wait plan. And what we've done is basically targeted 4 zip codes across the state that are the highest needs, and I'm using my air quotes here, worst from a statistical standpoint as far as our young adults from the ages of 16 to 24 that have basically become disengaged. They've either dropped out of school, or maybe they finished their diploma, but they haven't really successfully connected with higher education or a work life or some type of career. So how do we get those kids back engaged and on the path to being successful? And basically, it's a community outreach. We partner with other groups and organizations at the county level, at the state level, to help these students become successful. As we looked at that project, I forget what the number was. We looked at the lifetime impact of disengaged youth I don't know, 1.something-something billion dollars. But, Bill, that's not the loss of it to me. The loss is the potential of a citizen not being able to fulfill their dreams, their goals, and their ambitions.
I think it's very sad, the potential of these kids to leave school. And as you were pointing out, the economic impact for their future and for the future of the country is really dramatic, Diane Douglas.
It is. But, you know, our American education system, going back before the founding of this country, has always been one of educating every single child, educating every single citizen, so that they can fulfill their potential and become an engaged member of our society. You know, Bill, that's something that still doesn't happen around a lot of countries in this world. You know, in many countries, you take a test and a bureaucrat decides for you what your future will be. And I just hope to give these kids this spark to realize they can still become whatever they want to.
Yeah, it's interesting. We started this discussion with tests and talked about so-called high-stakes tests, but in many countries around the world, you talk about a high-stakes test, you take a particular test, if you don't reach a certain grade point, your career is basically going to be over.
Right. And you'll never get to go back.
No.
I mean, in America, if you go to work for, I don't care, 5, 10, 20 years and decide you want to change your path, we always allow you to go back.
You bet.
Do whatever you want to do. And that's the blessing of our system.
Yep. We relearn all the time, trying to learn here every day on the Buckmaster Show. That's why I do this. I want to learn every day. Diane Douglas, thank you very much.
Bill, thank you. It's a pleasure. Anytime.
All right. Diane Douglas is the Superintendent of Public Education in the state of Arizona. Coming up next here after our mid-break, Dr. Satish Hiremath, he is the mayor of Oro Valley. We'll be talking about that proposition that's on the ballot for the folks in Oro Valley. That and more on Buckmaster right after this. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in TUS. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org and remember to always start with trust.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com. .35 on the Thursday edition of the Buckmaster Show. This portion brought to you and me by Silver City, Grant County, New Mexico. What a great place. Just 3 hours east of Tucson to historic Silver City, known for its vibrant arts community. Downtown Silver City hosts a wide variety of beautiful galleries, gift shops, historic buildings, fine dining, and really some beautiful Victorian architecture sprinkled throughout Silver City. There's a great listing of accommodations in Silver City. Go to southwestnewmexico.org. You'll also find the many things to do there in Silver City. Dr. Satish Hiremath is the mayor of the town of Oro Valley. He's also a prominent dental provider, dentist in Oro Valley, and he joins us now from his dental office on the live line. Dr. Hiremath, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill. How are you?
Doing very well. I want to talk a little bit about this measure that voters will soon be tackling and voting on in the town of Oro Valley. What's at stake here?
Well, it's really development of primarily baseball fields for our youth. You know, we have Oro Valley Little League had three state championships in different divisions last year, and they do not practice in the town of Oro Valley, nor do they play games in the town of Oro Valley. And we just had a huge outcry for parents to say they want more ball fields and multi-purpose fields. And the residents could not put this on a ballot by themselves. And so they approached the council, and unanimously the council decided to put a bond, which is Proposition 454, on the ballot this November. And the residents get to either vote it up or vote it down.
And this is the only item on your ballot in November?
That is correct, yes.
And what park are we talking about?
This would be at the Narana Park site. Right now, there's two developed fields. We budgeted for two more fields that are under construction. And the town of Oro Valley has been very responsible. We've been doing a pay-as-you-go. But the parents just don't want to wait another 15, 20 years before everything is built out.
The kids will be long past their Little League days by then.
But their kids.
And their kids.
Play to the field, right?
Yeah. So what is the total cost of this project, and how did you come up with this particular number?
Well, the total cost of the project is $17 million. That's what we're bonding for. So the interest, you know, by the time you get to the interest over a 20-year bond, which does sunset, by the way, it'll be close to about $28 million. It will cost the average homeowner whose house is valued at $250,000 $4.50 a month, and that $4.50 does include the interest payment. And so we've done this enough in-house, and also we've secured some estimates about what the cost is going to be. So we feel very comfortable that this is a reasonable estimate. But here's the great news, Bill, is that let's just say for some goofy reason it comes in at $14 million. Well, guess what?
Yeah.
We just pay the $3 million back, and we only bond for $14 million.
Huh, because that's when I've been hearing rumblings and some of the opposition saying, why is it 17? How'd they come up with that figure? And what if it's less? What happens to that money?
Well, and I'll tell you, I've heard those same rumblings as well, and they're very good about just putting the cost of the ball fields in there, which they're accurate. Those are accurate figures because, you know, we've put ball fields in ourselves. However, the roadway to get there, the parking lots, the sewer or septic, the utilities, these are all lit fields. You know, it's not like we could do a clap-on, clap-off and buy stickums up there, right? So those are all the things that they're not taking into account. And you know what? Hopefully they're right. Hopefully the estimate is going to come lower so we don't have to bond as much.
Is this a multi-use facility? Is it going to be like bike paths or anything additional?
There will be additional things. There's going to be a park inside of that park, more with swing sets and playgrounds for the families who are watching kids that actually don't play or are too young to play. But, you know, this development really falls in line with our sports tourism efforts. Sports tourism is a $9 billion industry, and so we build them to attract different teams. But then the beauty of it is that when they're not in use, well, guess what? Our residents have grade-A fields that they get to use.
So this fits into your portfolio that includes swimming as well?
It really does. You know, we have the archery range, which is a nationally designed course, the aquatic center, obviously, which you can really do time trials for the Olympics. Lacey John Niemeyer, who was a former Olympic champion, a gold medalist, was a swimmer at James Creek Park when she was knee-high.
So other than this bond project, how does the council's financial picture look here as we begin our into the fall season?
You know, incredibly well. You know, people have a habit of cherry-picking the stuff that they feel that we're not doing well, specifically the golf, right? In layman's terms, 2 years ago when we acquired it, we lost $850,000. This last year, we lost about close to $600,000. But that's the cherry pick, right? So when you pull back and you look at the entire picture, we ran a surplus budget of $2 million. And I'll tell you, with Vice Mayor Lou Waters, Mary Snyder, Joe Hornet, and Steve Solomon when he was on council in 2010 to 2012, we were facing in 2010 a projected $3 million deficit. Since 2011 to the last fiscal year, Bill, we have run surplus budgets. And I don't know too many municipal governments across the country that can boast that.
And what is your population, and what do you think you could accommodate realistically in the future?
Well, the population is about 43,000, and I think with all the annexations and the expansions and things like that, we're still landlocked. I don't see us going over 65,000, to be honest with you, without significant acquisition of major acreages of open space. You know, Oro Valley is landlocked, and so right now the reason there's so much construction is, and I take responsibility for that, which is, you know, we've all lived in communities where construction seems to be a never-ending process. And, you know, my whole mantra has been since I was elected in 2010, let's inconvenience everybody at one time for 6 to 7 years, and then we just enjoy life. And that's why you see so much construction going on.
And where are you in that 6 to 7 year time frame?
You know, I think probably only about 2 more years left, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Where, you know, Oro Valley was once 85% undeveloped, and now there's less than 10% of developable land.
Wow.
And all those projects are either under construction, in the pipeline, or on the table for discussion.
All right, Dr. Hiermath, we'll let you get back to your next appointment there at the dental office. We really appreciate your time, sir. Thank you.
Bill, it's my pleasure.
All right, thanks. Dr. Satish Hiermath is the mayor of the town of Oro Valley. Coming up next, a remarkable religious art exhibition that is going to be in our town very soon, in a matter of days. We'll tell you all about it here on Buckmaster. Tucson now has its own Creole restaurant, named after the classic New Orleans cocktail. Sazerac Creole Kitchen and Cocktail Parlor is located in St. Phillips Plaza at River and Campbell. The New Orleans-inspired menu includes a full range of gumbos and much-loved beignets. See you soon at Sazerac, open daily, 8 a.m. to midnight at St. Phillips Plaza. The Regional Transportation Authority is on track to deliver the remainder of the promised projects in the 20-year plan, now in its 11th year. A recent 10-year performance audit finds the RTA sticking to the plan and schedule. The RTA applauds our members and partners for helping us to stay on schedule and to improve our transportation network for everyone. Working together for a better future, more at rtamobility.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Icons in Transformation is a remarkable modern religious art exhibition that will reside on loan at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church at River and Swan. River and Campbell. I know that. What am I talking about? In Tucson, from October 1st to January 7th, this exhibition will display more than 100 masterworks of Russian-born abstract expressionist Ludmila Pavlovska. Did I get that right?
So.
And we'll call you Mila for short. How's that? You go by Mila,
yes,
right?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for being with us. Born into exile, Mila pursued the arts in the wake of her mother's death and found inspiration from the traditional iconography of Russian Orthodox monasteries. With me also in studio is Reverend Robert Henderson, Father Robert, the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills. Good to see you, Father Robert.
It's good to be here.
You've got to be excited about this. Is a huge undertaking for the church,
well,
of which I am a member.
Yeah, I'm thrilled. I mean, I think it's the kind of thing that is a kind of, once in a generation experience, and I'm thrilled to have it here.
And it's been on loan for a while.
Yeah, I think, they've been on tour 19 years.
19 years.
Yeah. Yes, we've been doing it last 19 years, but 7 years in America.
Tell me a little bit about yourself, Mila. When did you get interested in art?
I started very early in the age 5-6 years. I started my first art school and then second art school and art college and art academy. And I was very lucky with my art first teacher. She believed in me, pushed me, and she thought the best education was in Moscow. And I was born in kind of Gulag, if you heard about Solzhenitsyn archipelago Gulag, place Karaganda.
Like Siberia?
Karaganda, Kazakhstan.
Oh my gosh.
Of political reasons, my family were deported there, dissidents. But I moved very early to study art to Moscow. Mm-hmm. And from Moscow, I moved to Sweden for 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. And when my mother died suddenly for 20 years ago, I was able to go through sorrow with help of my art. And icon became source of inspiration, of unconditional love, of a new way seeing divine for me. And it changed my life. Everything that happened in my life, it was kind of before and after. It's why I started to do this
These
tour.
Particular icons that I think everyone is fairly familiar with, the Russian Orthodox icons, you've kind of taken that tradition and sort of modernized it?
I feel like icons, they have special spiritual power, which mm-hmm. comes from icon itself, kind of light. And to create and to capture the life, it has been the greatest challenge for many artists through century. So this exhibit, Icons and Transformation, it's my attempt to create and light, to capture it in this way. And the question, can artists create believable images in which longing for divine is visible? Mm-hmm. So it's my attempt to answer this question.
And Father Robert, what do you see in her work?
Well, there are a couple of things. What I see when I engage it is this invitation to transformation. And I think one of the challenges of the church is how can we be something that is completely and utterly formed by tradition, but also not bound by a traditionalism that doesn't let us respond to the living culture around us. And so for me, this art embodies and is kind of representative of that struggle that's always at the heart of the church in every age and in every era, that we're always trying to figure out how do we respond to the real changing needs of the world, and how do we respond to that in a way that is deeply rooted in our historic promise that we believe that God longs to meet all people in every place. And so to do that, I think God uses different media. And one of those, I think, is art. And I think that her art reflects the attempt to merge the ancient with the modern in a way that's pretty transcendent.
The French painter Henri Matisse, recognized the significance of the Russian tradition in the development of modern art. His quote, "The artist's soul emerges in icons, and it is through them that we should learn and understand art." Mila, you use the human eye, I've noticed, in a lot of the images that I've been taking. I'm looking forward to seeing these images in person, but from the pictures I've seen, you use the human eye. What does that do? What does that does it for me when I see that? It brings me into the image. Is that kind of what you're thinking about?
It's true. Eyes, it's like window of your soul, your
right.
heart, your spirit. Eyes are. It's like a symbol of mindfulness, watchfulness, as well as the compassion. Some of them very sympathetic and tolerant, but some of them very sad and despairing, like our life. And many titles of my exhibit are "Your Face I'm Looking For." It's all about to see, to discover, to explore, to understand, to believe, but also about to be seen. Just know someone loves you, someone accepts you as you are. It's not video camera watching you. It's rather someone looking at you and during the same time supports you all your life. You feel presence of God. It gives you idea, don't be afraid, you're never alone.
And in Christianity, Father Robert, the eye has been very prominent, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And you see it over and over again, and particularly when you look at something like Michelangelo's David, or you look at these pieces and you're drawn to the eye. And I think what great artists do is they capture the soul in the eyes, and almost every piece of great work of sculpture or art, it's almost always the eyes that tell you whether the artist really understands the human soul or not.
Will there be some companion some seminars and companion pieces, if you will, Father Robert, that will go along with the exhibition?
There are. There are a whole range of things that are happening. There are seminars, there are talks and lectures. The gala opening is going to be on October 1st at 5 p.m., and anybody is welcome to come to that. So October 1st, 5 p.m., and that'll be the main kickoff, but then there is a whole schedule of events all the way through that. We have music that Sunday morning that is out of the Russian Orthodox tradition, so we're trying in various ways to explore these themes through music, through art, through lectures, through classes. So this is going to be an exhibit that goes all the way through January 7th, so the calendar of events is on our website.
And what is that website, please?
It is stphillipstucson.org, stphillipstucson.org.
Mila, I want to go back to your early, as a child, you said you started painting about 5, 6 years old. What painting were you originally drawn to as a child, and how did that pave the way for what you're actually doing now?
I mean, I never had any doubt about what I was going to do. I just knew I didn't have any choice. I was going to do and to be an artist. And I remember it was different classes, sculpture, paintings, and I couldn't live without it. It sounds like cliche. Every single day I had to draw everything around me, what I could see, the nature, landscape, portraits. But
you were very driven.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. I couldn't live without it. I couldn't breathe. It was I couldn't even make a choice. It's something I had to do. I even leave my home, leave my mother, and move very early in early age, 14 years old. I was one, and I it's why I miss my mother all my life. And mm-hmm. when she came to me to visit me to Sweden for the first time. And
when
she,
was that?
I got my first daughter, and it was happiest time in my life. Mm-hmm. It was for 25 years ago, and she came to visit me, and she got suddenly stroke, and I still miss her every single minute, mm-hmm. I feel her presence around me. It's why I went back to Russia and I visited many churches. I spoke to different priests. Mm-hmm. I had my questions, mm-hmm. and I try to find the meaning with my life. And as I mentioned, icons, they showed me the new way of seeing divine. Mm-hmm. I started to paint restlessly, every single kind of non-stop. I even couldn't sleep and decided to show this project. And why churches? Many people ask me, why churches? Why here? And I think church is a holy space. So in a way, it enables people to understand contemporary approach of spirituality. Because I am not icon painter. It's what I do. It's contemporary art.
So it is the appropriate place to show your work.
Absolutely, yes. Exactly.
And the Russian Orthodox, of course, have Father Robert, have a wonderful tradition of art. Mm-hmm. You've studied it, I'm sure. And it's very compelling, some of these images.
Yeah, it's incredibly arresting, because I what I find so intriguing about the iconography is that it at once communicates both the intimacy of relationship with God, but also the kind of majesty of a God whose throne we're always reaching for. So there's this wonderful interplay of both incredible closeness that's also at the same time somehow manages to communicate that kind of majesty, tremendum, as the Latin says, of God's power and unchanging nature.
How close are our Christian Church, the Episcopal Church, to Russian Orthodoxy? Are there some similarities?
I would say there are similarities. Some of the similarities have to do with a liturgical sacramental approach. You know, so we believe that God uses common things like bread and wine to communicate grace. I think we share a commitment to the belief that human creative capacity is not a distraction from God, but is a pathway to encounter God more deeply. Many parts of our liturgical text, the Book of Common Prayer, were adapted from Russian liturgical materials. So there's a lot of interplay, and especially in the last 100 years, there's been a lot more dialogue and increasing closeness between the two traditions.
Mila, what about working in oil, or you also do sculpture? What is your main medium?
I call my medium three-dimensional paintings. It's between sculptures and painting. And everything for indoors, I use wooden panel.
Okay.
And for outdoors, steel. And a special structure paste. Mm-hmm. And I mix different materials like ceramic, stone, copper, different kind of metals. Mm. and I experiment.
Very multimedia, then, isn't it?
Yes. I should say.
So the base begins as on a wooden.
And you
board.
Build yes on you wooden build, panel. You right. you build the surface uh-huh. and use even fabric, different things, and even some objects like bullets or icons against war. I hate war. It's mm-hmm. it's very big project. I've been doing an even Berlin Wall installation. So you mm-hmm. use different things and
in your colors. Do you kind of mix your own paints sometimes, or do
I use pigment? I use pigment? Acrylic. I use oil. I use different mediums.
So you're not limited by one
no,
medium.
No, absolutely not. It's
multimedia.
Yes, I should say, but always the technique and skills. It comes kind of. It's the second thing. Why are you doing it for me? I'd like to think about art like about something very meaningful.
Okay.
But the technique, it has to be. It's important. How can you express your idea?
Mila Palaloska. Palaloska.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Welcome to Tucson from your home in Sweden, and you'll be here for a while, right? And Father Robert, quickly give us the update now on where people can see the exhibit.
So the exhibit is at River and Campbell at St. Philip's Episcopal Church. That's 4440 North Campbell. The gala opening is October 1st at 5 p.m.
All right. We'll look forward to that. Thank you both very much.
Thank you so very much for having us.
Coming up this afternoon, Mic Check with Mike Shaw and Ray Allen helps out Mike. And then tomorrow morning, Wake Up Tucson 6 to 9. We'll have the mayor with me in studio tomorrow for our Friday Focus interview, Mayor Rothschild. On behalf of Ray Allen, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Hope you have a great afternoon and evening.